Hi everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to this last episode of the season called Evolve. Thank you for going on this journey with me and the guests on this podcast as we explore the stories of their personal evolutions, their path of becoming. From becoming a creative novelist, best-selling author, to becoming a dancer, actress, spiritual teacher, storyteller, and dating coach, the possibilities are infinite. At the heart of all of their stories is the willingness to live an authentic and purposeful life. Despite the challenges, fear, and self-doubt, these women chose a path that is in alignment with their most authentic selves as they turned their wounds into wisdom, pain into purpose, and committed to walk on the path of truth. This is also the path that lights them up and brings them joy. This episode is being released at the end of February 2023, right before we enter an astrological cycle of intense change, of endings and new beginnings, with Saturn entering Pisces, followed by the beginning of a new astrological year and eclipse season. As we welcome and embrace these changes in our lives and in the collective evolution, let us remember that our purpose here is to seek the truth, our truth, and to live in our highest expression of our truth. For me, that carries an essence of love, beauty, and joy. So may these stories inspire you, and without further ado, let's get into this episode with Liz Andalon, a first-generation Filipina healing arts practitioner. Hi everyone, welcome to the Permission to Become podcast. This is a podcast about Asian American women exploring their boundaries and permissions around self-discovery and personal empowerment. In this podcast, we will dive into the untold tales of Asian American women breaking out of who they should be and becoming who they truly are. My name is Joyce Bao, and I'm your host on this podcast. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Permission to Become podcast. Today, I'm excited to introduce to you our guest, Liz Andalon. Liz is a healing arts practitioner, a facilitator, and intuitive educator who's passionate about holding spaces for people to do less and feel more. And it is within that space that she calls the sacred pause, and that people can tap into their healing power that's accessible within themselves. She does a variety of different healing practices, from energy work, subtle body exploration, emotional release, guided visualization. And she recently certified and is a teacher in residence at the Esalen Institute. And I'm excited to introduce to you, Liz. Welcome to the podcast, Liz.
Thank you, Joyce. I'm so excited. I've been really looking forward to our time together. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited as well. So I will dive right in. And because this podcast is really focused on sharing stories of Asian American women just stepping out of the mold that we've been kind of cast in society and to step into their purpose and what they're meant to do in the world. And you are a first generation Filipina American, and also many firsts, the first to complete a college degree, the first to go into the healing arts. So there's a lot to unpack there. And I'm curious, what is that this identity of being a Filipino American mean to you?
To be honest, I think the identity of claiming Filipino American is somewhat of a recent exploration and reclamation. I feel like I've spent so much of my life and so much of that time trying to assimilate and trying to be like everyone else. And I feel like recently with public events and now really this general sentiment of really owning who we are we really stepping into this place and area of owning that lineage. I don't know if you read Crying in H Mart.
I have.
Talk about someone who's really reclaiming that. There's so much of Michelle Zahner's words that resonated with me of her trying to understand what it was to be first generation. And on top of that, being biracial. But I think for me, what it means, especially in this line of work, is so much of the work that I do is just reminding people and giving them the space to be themselves, whether it means showing up really messy emotionally, whether that means showing up with all of this baggage or all of our intergenerational trauma. I think so much of the work that I've done around reclaiming or reclamation of my Filipino culture is also an understanding that I don't know very much. You know, my family has been so focused on assimilating because assimilating makes things safer for us. It makes us able to blend in more. And it gives us and provides us a little bit of a safety in some ways where I think when I really think about it, survival for us meant not sticking our necks out, not standing out. And so to kind of be in this space as a first gen person who has chosen a healing arts journey and a career path, to talk about really sticking my neck out, it's been something that's been challenging in some ways because I try to look for people, you know, when they give you coaching around, you know, when you're building your business, you want to see people who are like you or people that you are inspired by. I really look around and I have a hard time finding a lot of people of color who are in the healing arts. And then when you narrow it down to Asian American, and then even within that realm, Filipino healers, I think there's a few of us that I might follow on Instagram, but otherwise, I feel like I'm so excited that it's something that people are really tapping into. And a lot of the work that I'm kind of looking into now is decolonizing the healing arts. And I think I'm curious because what continues to come up for me is this push to understand more specifically the healing arts in the Filipino tradition, which I know nothing about. And as you mentioned, I'm a certified Reiki practitioner. So that's where I originated, but now really feeling that call to understand my tradition, my history.
Yeah. You used many strong words and I kind of want to dig a little bit into what you just shared. First, on reclamation, I really love how you use the word, I'm reclaiming my identity, because I think as a person of color in America, like so much of our identity is being erased because of assimilation and the need to feel safe and feel a sense of belonging. And so I'm curious, like, what was your process of reclamation? Like, how did you reclaim your identity as a Filipina American, as an Asian American in your work?
I think that's a work in progress. I find myself all the time wanting to just blend into the background. I think that's so much of my DNA, literally and figuratively. But I think for me, it is, and I think that's, it's always interesting to talk about this, right? When we talk about work that supports ourselves and that reclamation, I really think it starts with me. And with me, meaning that I reclaim myself and my wholeness, my sacredness, my sovereignty. That means honoring rituals. Like this morning, I had to take time to do my morning pages and I pulled cards. And that was important to me. And that felt like I'm reclaiming that part of me and my identity. A lot of the reclamation has been a lot of self-education and a lot of reading books. And a lot of that has been hours spent trying to research who are people that I can trust or who are people that I want to study from. Because I think in the way that we have this huge entire world of knowledge and accessibility, it can be really easy to attach ourselves to things that might initially resonate with us and then things we might grow out of, which I think is also part of the spiritual journey. And I think a lot of the reclamation is also listening. because I feel like we're so disconnected to that internal voice. There's always that nudge, you know, sometimes it shows up for people in so many different ways, but I always feel like if that nudge comes two or three times, there's something to that. Like, of course, I think we should listen the first time, but we're human. And so for me lately, that reclamation has really been recent. And I think about that all the time in my work as an energy practitioner, where now I'm not just interested in the initial lineage that I was taught under, but I want to understand how energy healing comes across so many different lineages and so many different cultures. And so I guess there's no summary on what reclamation looks like. And I don't want to fool listeners into thinking that I have it figured out, because I think the process of reclamation is unique to each individual. And it's something that only you can hear for yourself. And so I encourage people, you know, if you feel like you want to learn about your roots, a lot of it for me too is wanting to talk to my elders, like my aunts and uncles, about their journey. Even now, just starting to talk with my mom and my aunt about their immigration journey. Like, I didn't know anything about the hardships of what it was like to immigrate into this country. Even learning about the legal process of becoming a citizen, like, we don't talk about that stuff, you know, because talk about hiding, you know, there's something around that journey where if you have a green card that, like, you don't want to talk about it, you want to be sure that you have all your ducks in a row. And I think maybe it starts there. I think it starts with us reclaiming our own selves, our bodies, what we need, and then also not being afraid to kind of notice where those inclinations are leading us.
Yeah. And it's like, it sounds like it's like you're giving yourself the permission to reconnect with your roots and to get curious and inquire. And I'm sure it added a lot of richness to your own experience and also kind of the work that you're doing and your mission. I'm kind of curious, who were you before becoming a healer?
It's a fun story. I always tell people, like, if you had asked me 10 to 15 years ago or told me that this is what I'd be doing, I would have laughed in your face. I was so many different things. I think, like, when I think about it, I make the joke that I'm like the black sheep of my family, in the way that I have always been very unique. I've always been unique in the way that I really follow the beat of my own drum. So I've always been a seeker, always, always, always curious about the whys, curious about how the world works. And so me before being a healer, I'm like, how far back are we going? But I would say the earliest back from there that I feel like was a whole 180 was I graduated at the beginning of a recession. And at the time, college in and of itself was a journey that I think for a first gen going into the UC system, like, I didn't even know how to look at colleges. I didn't know the differences between SEMs and tries, or figuring out if a 500 person class was better than like a 30 person class, which if I would have done over again, I probably would have done a smaller school. So coming out of college, in a way, I felt already so much of the machinations of being like, you got to do this. If you're smart, you should be a doctor or a lawyer, or pick one of those professions. And as soon as I got out, the world was like, oh, you want a job? No, we don't have any for you. And so I really just, I was a corporate cog for a long, long time. But I, in my own way, I hopped around a lot of different places. I did retail. I did wellness and fitness. I'd worked as a personal assistant for a CEO of a well-known company. I had done corporate banking for a little bit, project management, advertising. I really was trying to figure out
what do I want to do? Who am I?
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I think all of my early 20s was about that. And I was also very much, like, truth be told, a person that went to Vegas every couple months and partied a lot.
Okay.
I was a huge drinker. I loved going to concerts. I just was someone that really lived life to the fullest. I'd even had studied a bunch of different religions and had converted to Islam at one point, which I'm not trying to glorify in the way that I'm like, look at me, I'm spiritual. But it was to illustrate the point that I was really trying to seek. And it's very much who I am.
I love that. And I can also relate, because it's this phase of your life where you're exploring and experimenting and trying to figure out who you are and kind of what is your path. And I underestimated, like, in our 20s, especially, like, how actually difficult that period of time is, because there's no guidance, there's no set path, right? And there are all these voices telling us what we should do. And it's kind of this push and pull of like, do I follow my heart, my gut, my instinct, or do I listen to these voices? And so I love just you sharing kind of the variety of things you tried. And I'm really curious, like, how did you eventually get on your path? Because looking at you now and even listening to you, you seem very grounded in your being. And it seems to me from the outside that, like, you have found your path and you know what your sacred purpose is, how you're meant to serve. So I'm kind of curious, like, how did you get to that pivotal point of realizing you want to go into the healing arts profession?
I feel like there's so many different ways. The main thorough lines that I can remember is, one, I've always been such a sensitive child. Like, I remember in third grade, my third grade teacher pulled my parents aside for like a teacher conference, and they're like, she is too sensitive. Like, you got to do something about this. Yeah. Like, I was just constantly crying, and I was interacting with energy at that point, but, you know, like, we didn't talk about energy. We didn't even understand emotions as energy or physical sensations. And so that I've always experienced energy in a way that I just assumed everyone else did. And truth be told, I still feel everyone does experience. And it wasn't until much later when I did my first Reiki training that I was like, oh, there's a whole world that explains, like, how I've been feeling the whole time. Like,
yeah.
So there's that line. And then the other part of it that really got my attention was my health. I feel like when I've talked to a lot of other healers, there's almost like this archetypical way that their life unfolds, where some point in the 20s, like, they hit a point of a health problem or thing that prevents them from living their full life, that they're like, hey, you got to listen to this. If you don't fix this, you know, this isn't going to work. And so for me, what that was, my last corporate gig was in advertising, and I loved it. The intersection of design, of creativity, of intentionality. And what I couldn't realize at the time, and this is before we had talked about like the stress response of the body and that stress could be responsible for health issues. I had ulcers at like 23. Yeah. Like, really tremendous stomach stuff. And now that I've, you know, like, for my astrology babes, I'm like, I'm a double Virgo, so if that makes sense in the stomach, it just is totally a thing. And I could not figure out, it was like a slew of health problems that started with the stomach stuff. And there was nothing that any Western doctor could tell me. Like, they've given me all of the prescriptions and I'd done all the things, but it still wasn't getting better. And I think it was like at that point, you know, I was already kind of starting on the journey. I'd grown up in a Catholic family. And luckily with an aunt and uncle that also had exposed me to a lot of other religions. So I'd gone to a bunch of other sacred temples and locations in their attempt to show that, like, there's so many paths to spirituality, which, thank goodness for that, because that's a whole nother conversation we could have about religion, spirituality. But it was an ER stint that, like, I had this, it wasn't even ulcerative pain at that point. It was a different pain in my body that the ER doctors could not figure out. Like, they'd done all of the scans, all of the ultrasounds. And it wasn't until I think I had gone to a healer. I forget even how. I think at that point, you know, you're like at rock bottom and you're like,
you're desperate.
Looking for anything to tell me how to get better. It was a mix of going to this healer who was, his name's Gregory Coleman. He's older. I actually don't know if he's still practicing, but it was kind of a wake up call between the ER visit and that, where he was like, hey, it wasn't directly like you're intuitive, you should probably do something about this, but it was just like, check into these things, like keep singing, playing music. And at that point, I think I had been doing yoga for maybe 5 years on and off. And it was almost like after that point, the health kind of happened. I got fired from my last advertising job.
Meant to
and
be.
Yeah, it was just like,
your guys were working in the background.
Exactly. They're like, can I clear out more space for you to just do this thing? And I had to kind of face myself with the fact of, okay, if I'm going to have to do a job for 8 hours a day, what is it that I want to do? And I was like, the only thing that I could think of at the time, because it helped my body, mind, and spirit, was yoga. And I think this is before people thought that becoming a yoga teacher was viable, and before the field was oversaturated. Not saying people don't have a seat at the table, but you know, like now it's so easy. Cool. You know, like you can be a yoga teacher and also be a corporate person, or like do yoga teaching in the field with everything else. And so back then it just felt like, you're going to do what? Like trade in all this thing to do what?
Right. So you became like, so you started your journey and did your yoga teacher training. That was sort of what catapulted you to really explore more of like the healing tradition or the healing arts field.
Absolutely. It was, you know, it's fun to think back on all these points, because I'm realizing just how almost divinely orchestrated they feel. Because I remember I had found just the right teacher for me at the time, and it was like a month-long immersion into it, and which gave me time to really sink in and commit to it every day. Like we had to wake up at like 6:30 in the morning, which felt like ungodly at that time, because I was still out partying, still living like that life.
Duality of life.
Yeah. And I remember like I couldn't even afford the yoga training. So I was doing like a work trade where I'd get there early, I'd like sweep the yoga studio, I'd stay after clean, and doing the yoga training. I remember, you know, when I was in school, I wanted to be a doctor. I love the body. I love the body so much. I think bodies are so cool. That I remember just sitting there and realizing that there's a reason that all of these things are connected. Like the reason why yoga feels good is like, it actually isn't just to work out. It actually primarily is not a workout modality. It's to work the body so you could come into meditation and really connect with the divine. But I remember we were sitting in pigeon pose, and my teacher was pointing out, like, so if we direct our breath into the outside of the hip, watch her hip. And I could see the breath inflate and deflate the hip. Like if you're just present with that and just realizing like, oh my God, there's a reason to this. There's a why beyond this that's tethered to biology and psychology and all of these things. And, but at that point I was like, I don't know, this is kind of what I'm just going to do. But it's through that spaciousness that I think that I found first there that like, oh, healing can be a way. Like I love to help people. I also have been on my own healing journey. I think it was also very unconscious in my journey, where out of my own survival, I had to figure out how to heal myself so that I could show up fully in the world. And then it's somehow become a thing.
You were talking about the archetype earlier, and I was totally thinking that you're the wounded healer, where you have to go through the lived experience in order to then step into the healing role and serve as a healer. So I know you mentioned that you're almost the first person in your family to really step into the role of being a healing arts practitioner. I think you mentioned you had a aunt who back in Philippines is also a healer, but it's like, I think in this, in your journey, you're really navigating like how to make this a career and profession. And also the field, there's so many different ways you can be a healer. So I'm really curious, like, how did you navigate that? And on that journey of figuring out, you know, what you wanted to do?
Ooh, I think it's something that continues to unfold, because if I'm really honest, the last couple of weeks, and I was teasing my girlfriends, I was like, I don't know what's up in the astrology, but I am in my feels around self-worth, and I'm in my feels around, like, is this truly the path? Because entrepreneurship is challenging. It is a way in which you are choosing to have that freedom of creativity and freedom to do what you're doing, but at the expense of not having a steady paycheck, not having steady clientele, and even to make the commitment to do a small business. I was telling someone else the other day that, like, you have to be incredibly privileged to do that. If you have the funds to do it, or if your family is able to support you, like, to go in on a business requires so much trust. I make the joke, I'm like, if you're thinking about doing it, don't do it. No, I'm kidding. But, like,
it's good to have that perspective, especially for the listeners, to hear people who have dived fully in, and then also just to hear your perspective, like, what are all the things we need to weigh and really think through before really jumping in and knowing or figuring out if this is the right path?
Absolutely. And I think what we take for granted is how privileged business owners are to be in that space. And to go in line with that, like, you know, my family, it was very sweet during the pandemic. I had so much momentum coming into my business. And much like anyone else, the pandemic really slowed everything down. And, you know, we're dealing with unprecedented economic situations and all the whole thing. But, you know, at the time, my mom was like, we can't give you much, but what we can give you is a place to be. So if you need to save money and be here, like, we can give you food, and that's what we can give you. And that, for me, I feel like means so much more, because, you know, I'm so thankful for my family to be able to have given me that space and place to do that, to kind of cultivate.
And supporting your dreams too, of, they know this is important to you and this is what you want to grow. And just knowing that family is there to have your back, like, that's a huge statement in itself.
Absolutely. Because I also feel like, you know, the dynamics of interpersonal relationships are delicate in that way, where even to get to that point, it's taken a lot of my parents having to trust and be like, oh, this is a viable way to do this. This is going to be a different journey, you know, than just kind of clocking in and doing a corporate job. But I think with this journey of entrepreneurship, in knowing my path as a healer, that is also a battle every day, where I'm like, wait, are you sure you're talking to me? Like, this is, I'm the person that has to do it. And I think it's a choice. Someone wise told me that to really step into the healing path, you truly have to heal yourself. And so I don't know what the evolution of wounded healer is. I almost want to say, like, healed healer maybe is the archetype that I want to push on people now, where, like, you know, now I feel like when I look at Instagram, part of what I see are a lot of white-bodied healers who don't attribute their lineages or their teachings to lineages. A lot of people that can market, you know, the dark sides of their healing journey and make it about them. For me to even say that I'm a healer, I'm still so tentative about that word, because I'm not healing anyone. Like, I'm not responsible for healing anyone except myself. And all that I can do is hold spaces to let people touch into what that healing journey might look like for them, or help clarify, or even just be a person next to that person while they're figuring out their stuff. Because what I tell people is, like, healing has to be chosen, right? Like, going back to that rock bottom, you got to choose your healing. Like, if I'm in session with someone, you know, all family members are like, oh, can you send healing to your aunt, to your uncle, or da da da. I'm like, I could, but this person has to choose that and want it and ask for it. Like, step number one, you have to ask for consent. Like, someone can't even energetically receive healing unless they are open to it and deeply in their heart wanting that. And so I guess when I think about healing in that way, it's so important for me to talk about, you know, all of the places that we've learned from, all the lineages that we attribute these learnings from, but also recognize that being a healer first and foremost starts with the self. And to set out on this journey, again, making the joke, is to be really transparent about my healing for myself. And that's something that I also try to figure out, is at what level, not that I'm a celebrity or anything, but at what level do I keep private for myself? At what space do I share with other people? And figuring out that line, is this helpful? Is this harmful? Is it somewhere in between? And so with the work that I do, I'm really cognizant, and it probably keeps me from, you know, catapulting into more and more success around like really creating trauma-informed spaces for people, being really mindful of the spaces that people come from, because I feel like when we talk about healing, we also leave out the idea around accessibility. It's privilege to receive the healing that you want. You know, it costs what now, like $200 to get a bodywork massage. It costs this amount of money to do a cryo float or to get the supplements that you need. And, you know, like coming from humble beginnings and even being an entrepreneur, it's like, sometimes you have to pick between healing and paying your rent.
Right. This is actually a really great segue. Just speaking of privilege, because you were recently teaching at Esalen, which is like one of the most renowned healing and spiritual institutes in the world. And I think part of the reason I wanted to interview you on this podcast is because when I look at the faculty there, most of the people are white and you're one of the few women of color in their faculty list. So I'm curious, like, what was that experience like for you? Speaking of privilege, right? Like, the people who can go there are people who are privileged most of the time. And also, like you mentioned, the people who can get to that level to teach there also has a certain level of privilege. So I'm really curious about your experience of like how you landed there. What was your intention? And what was your experience kind of being in that space and standing out?
Oh my gosh, like already firing on all four cylinders, because there's so much to talk about. And I feel like accessibility and healing is one of the things I'm most passionate about. So thank you for asking this question. Esalen came about, again, like this divinely orchestrated moment where I had assisted a couple workshops last year. And at the second workshop, I'd happened to have brunch because the facilitator that I was supporting wanted to introduce me to the program director. And one, she being a person of color, talk about genuine generosity and whatever the antithesis of gatekeeping is, which I think is like remembering that there is so many ways that we can share resources. And so through that breakfast, she had mentioned there was a teacher in residence opportunity in the fall. And I was like, oh, this is like in 2 months, there's no way I can make this work. Like, and in my head, I was like, but if it happens to work out, who am I to say no? And so she kind of offered that out. And the facilitator I was working with couldn't do it because she's in a PhD program. And the more and more I thought about it, the more and more I was like, oh man, but if I can do this, this would be really great. Like an opportunity to just almost like tuck away and finesse my craft, which I feel like at the time I was still trying to really nail down. And the experience was amazing. Somehow everything worked. Again, privilege, where at the time I was living at my parents' house, so I didn't have to pay rent. So I was able to leave my housing situation. The restaurant that I worked at the time was like, totally go for your dreams. You'll have a job when you come back. Again, talk about privilege. The teacher in residency is not paid. And so that was another part of it where I had to really think, like, do I have the foundation to come back to? Like, for someone who hadn't fully dived back on into entrepreneurship, that would cause anyone to think twice about that. You know, like, can I sublet my home? Can I X, Y, and Z? But when I got there, I remember flipping through the faculty list. I literally counted, Joyce, the number of people of color practitioners, and then women, and then like Asian American. And it's like literally less than 10, I think, people of color, people, women of color, on like 7 pages of faculty. And so,
and this is where most people go for healing. Like, they're known for being renowned and being, you know, one of the most like prestigious places. And yet there's this lack of representation. And it makes me wonder too, like,
I think about that all the time. And I'll even say through that lens on the experience, it was, I make the joke, it's really not like serious, but I feel like if you ever watched White Lotus, of like,
oh my God,
how you see life through the staff's eyes. And yes, like, I felt like
first season, especially first season.
So good. I felt like from first facilitating and now being part of the staff was almost like going behind the curtain a little bit. So in that way, I felt like I got to see a little bit more. Some of my dearest friends are still folks that work on staff there and are also some of the faculty. And the wonderful part about it is they're aware of the disparity. They're aware of diversity and inclusion. And I think the much like any company or nonprofit or organization, sometimes you have all these desires to make all these actions and do things, but I think it does start from the top. And I know that they are making plenty of strides. Like, even the first week, talk about divine orchestration. On Wednesday nights, they have a Wednesday night program where they have people come in and talk or presentations. Or the first week that I got there, and I'd been thinking about this, knowing that Esalen is on Esalen tribe land, I had met up with a friend who is also an incredible healer, and she was talking about giving an offering to the land and to the tribe and the people that came before. And I'd never been open to earth energy in that way, or really honoring the ancestry of the people whose land was stolen from them. The first Wednesday night program was one of the Esalen tribe elders doing a land acknowledgement and also speaking about our history. And I was just like, I couldn't believe how fortunate that was. And even seeing the internal workings of how they're really trying to make reparative relationships with the Esalen tribe in Monterey, that's been really, really incredible. But to be a person and you look out in your classes and you're like, I'm often the only person of color. I remember there was this incredible Black couple that came in, and it was just, you know, there's this recognition of like, we're here, we made it here, and we are fortunate, but like, there needs to be more. I think that was my kind of experience with that. And I toss and turn with that all the time too, with my realignment sessions. There was a time in 2020 where I had way more sliding scale offerings. And I think being an entrepreneur, you realize you're like, crap, like, I can only do this if I have regular clients who can help sustain the foundations of me to live and pay rent and do that. And it was really hard for me as a healing arts practitioner to figure out, like, how do I help support the community that is most in need of healing while also trying to figure out my own living situation. And I think that's something that a lot of people think about too.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious, like, why aren't there more women of color and also specifically Asian American women in the healing arts?
I don't know if this is right, but my initial thought is like, it's not practical to do what I'm doing. And I wonder if a lot of the dynamics too around familial support, like, what would their families think about leaning into this work? I also think, you know, when I think about Indigenous healing, I don't see a lot of Asian American healing traditions shared. Like I've seen a lot around Latin American healing traditions. You know, so many people go to Peru or to Mexico or all these other places, but I'm like, and I think there's still a stigma too around witch doctors, right? Like when I think about Filipino traditions of hilot, there's hilot, which is like a hands-on laying of the hands. I don't want to say similar to Reiki, but in the same style of hands-on healing. And then there's also doctors that are like, there is no English word other than witch doctors that you go to when you're sick. And I think there's still that stigma around that kind of healing outside of acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine, which has been around for thousands of years and refined as a medical science over thousands of years. I think I see more healers in that tradition. But still, even then, it's funny because I still see so many more white bodies in that space than
exactly
Asian American healers.
Yeah, it's a topic maybe we can't fully address here or have answers to, but it does kind of baffle me in terms of looking at like even like Qigong, right? Like or different like Reiki, for example, like these Asian healing traditions are being taught by like white body individuals. And so it makes me wonder like why aren't there more representation? Because I have been in workshops or retreats where I felt out of place. I would be the only one of the few Asian women in the group. And so a lot of the issues or challenges they talk about, like I don't necessarily relate, or maybe even my own lived experiences. And like you talk about you doing trauma-informed work, like sometimes I don't feel safe in those spaces. And so, well, one, I really do appreciate what you're doing and your representation and creating containers and safe spaces, because I would feel safe working, for example, with someone like you who like share that representation. And so, yeah, like I think that leads to sort of the work that you're doing now. You mentioned earlier you're focused on trauma-informed work. You do a variety of different energy healing modalities. Can you just tell everyone a little bit about how you landed on those? What was your intention kind of when you set out to create your business and to serve as a spiritual healer and guide?
Absolutely. One of the other things when I think about my life 15 years ago is and still stands true today is I'm an absolute shit meditator. You know, like I feel like when they talk about healing and doing the work, they're always like, you know, you should really like meditate. And I'm like, I cannot. Like I'm a recovering type A, meaning that I really like to do, and burnout is a place that I constantly am in. And so much of my healing and the spaces that I create are to help those people that are also recovering type A's and people that can't sit still in meditation, or people that know they're on the cusp or keep hitting that wall of burnout and are realizing like, oh, this is unsustainable. How do I keep doing this? Which I think probably applies to like 90% of everybody out there. But the healing modalities that I offer, they're bottom-up processing. So I like to start with a body first to then access our internal space, compass, emotions, and mind. I feel like when we start with a body, first of all, when we're hitting that wall of burnout, we're constantly disassociating and disconnecting from the physical body. So the goal of what I'm trying to do, which is why I call it realignment, is realigning with that inner body wisdom. And the wisdom of our body can be felt in so many different ways. It's not just the body intuition. It's also our emotional intelligence, and it's also our energetic intelligence. And that linked up with the mind really helps us then connect with the spirit. And it's when we're dropped into that place of realignment with our body, our mind, and our spirit that I feel like we can really be the most empowered and authentic versions of ourselves. And that the practice of realignment, much like balance, is a moving target. It's never a set point, because people are always looking for a set point of like, oh, I know that I'm in realignment or balance when I hit this or when I do that. And you're like, why doesn't this work like now? Or how come this was working and now it's not? And so a lot of the modalities I try to introduce to folks or reintroduce to folks and reconnect is about finding and understanding the practice of meeting yourself where you are in this moment. And so those practices are what I call body mapping. And so what I try to help people do is to map out their physical body. Like, what is arising in this moment? And I feel like when we connect first with the body, it helps us just be aware of what's going on spatially, because oftentimes we're so externally focused. Like, what does it look like to just notice where we're at? And like, if we took a moment and you're like, oh crap, my middle back hurts, and like, this is going on, or I'm kind of pinched up here. And then we can kind of dive in a little bit deeper into noticing, okay, so let's focus in on one of those body parts. If you were to focus in on that body part, what could you start to notice here? Is there any emotions? Are there textures? Is there colors? What's going on with that? And so with this bottom-up processing and this exploration of the body's intelligence, we use a lot of these tools around visualization. And as we know now, studies have shown how powerful visualization is for us. And then kind of tying that together with energy work, where I feel like my goal and my mission is to help people realize, like, we all interact with energy all the time. Anyone can walk in a room and you can know, right? Like, you'll know, you like the vibe, you don't like the vibe, or this is a person I resonate with, or ooh, like when that person said that thing, this, it felt like this in my body. But we're taught to completely dishonor and disconnect from that. And so a lot of this work right now is really just trying to help folks realign with all the things that they know within themselves, because I really believe, and one of my favorite teachers says this, Erica Gagnon, you are your greatest healer. So really putting that power back into people's hands to recognize, one, everyone has a responsibility to heal themselves. Two, everyone can only heal themselves. And three, that you can heal yourself and to feel empowered in that. And healing doesn't have to be this woo-woo, like, take out my ritualistic blade and like offer the blood sacrifice to the moon. It can be as simple as tuning in with your own energy, noticing your energy, and then taking responsibility for that energy.
Yeah. I love your breakdown of that. And I'm curious, like, specifically around tuning into our energy, right? Because you mentioned starting with the body. And I think most of us, even if we're dissociated, like, we can feel pain, physical pain in our body and notice that. But the subtle energy is very delicate. And I think for you, as someone who's sensitive, like, it's a natural gift where you can tune into the subtle energy. I'm curious if you have guidance for those who haven't been as in tune with the energy of their body. Like, what can they do to start to play with and kind of really build a relationship with the energies that they around them and the energy in their body?
I feel like that a lot of people who might not feel into or automatically connect to that intuitive side or the subtler energetic body, the word that comes up when I was thinking, when you had spoken or kind of shared that question, was around like distrust. I feel like there's a distrust, or there's some barrier that doesn't allow them to trust whatever is coming up for them in the initial moments, whether it be like, you know, a lot of people that I see, their way of survival, and a lot of the energetic practices that I realize is are all born out of survival, right? Like, dependent on our family home or place of origin, all these things. A lot of survival is also dependent on turning off the intuition or turning off the emotions, turning off the body. And so I feel like it's simplistic to say, but I feel like the practice of just even checking in with yourself in that moment of like, I remember when I was going on all four cylinders, it'd be so easy for me to push through, push through, and push through. And one of the things that I realized is like, oh crap, like my body's been telling me this entire time, but I'm just mowing through these signs. So for those that feel like they're disconnected from hearing that inner self, that inner voice, or even physical sensations, I would encourage them to just notice their physical body and honor spaces and times. And I'm not saying like it has to be 45 minutes of feeling in. Whenever I give homework to my clients or people I'm working with, I'm always like, let the homework be 3 to 5 breaths. Anyone can sit with something with 3 to 5 breaths and just start there. Like initially, it is going to be uncomfortable and you're going to sit there being like, okay, I feel the pain in my hand. So what, you know? But I think what happens when you start creating that neural pathway to this thing, the body will take over and curiosity will then carry you the rest of the way where you're like, why is it that this hurts? Like, then you start to kind of unwind the normalization that we tend to do where like, we're so normalized to stuffing things down or being like, oh, I don't want to be feeling this pain or doing this, or like, I'm weak if I ask for this. So I guess the starting point is just to see if you can just sit with something for 3 to 5 breaths, notice it, know that you don't have to do anything with it, and that the power in simply noticing it is more than enough. It's more than that unconscious moment you had.
Yeah, I love your approach. And I think you touch on two things. One is building the trust back with ourselves and with our intuition, because that's something that's innate. And I think a lot of our lives, especially if we've been growing up with drowned in kind of these external voices of what we should do, even what we should eat, how we should behave, right? Then we naturally lose that disconnection to our authentic self. So I think part of that, like what you said, is building that trust. And I also really love, it's a little passive approach to healing. It's like letting the inner wisdom come through rather than kind of feeling like, oh, I have to push for the healing to happen, or I have to push for the connection to happen. It's a very, like, I feel it's a very feminine sort of approach of receiving the wisdom and the guidance and the healing for our own body.
I feel like as a natural pusher, it's been a practice for me, because I realize, like, if we think that everything is energy, how we enter into situations, how we make decisions, if you broke that down to energy, I can point to probably like so many times in my life where I forced something, and I can immediately point you to the archetypical, like, yes, that was an important detour, or yes, that was an important pathway, but it didn't quite pan out. And I think like when we give ourselves a spaciousness, I think the other level would also be understanding we have so many voices or inclinations in our own mind and our own body. How can you kind of differentiate between the voices? There's an urgency with which the ego moves. There's a pushing. It's like a hunger that needs to happen now. And when you start realizing like that deeper, higher wisdom or spiritual voice comes, it's almost like a whisper. It's almost as if you didn't sit still for that moment, or like, you know, when you're in the shower and you're like, have that floating by thought, you're like, oh, this is just a rogue thought. You're like, oh, wait, no, that could be a deeper spirit talking to me. I think maybe that would be the second step, is starting to understand the energy with which those voices come in through your head. And then practicing. A lot of the work that I share, and maybe it's my human design profile of a 1-3 where I'm constantly in trial and error, I'm like, you just gotta give it a whirl. Oh, is that right? Yes. We have a whole nother conversation to have. That's been my life. I'm just like, you gotta try it, you know? Yeah. Like, every body is different.
Yeah.
Everyone's gonna interpret things differently. And I think that's the other thing that I'd recommend, is like, you can't know until you try.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely. Yeah. Agree with that. And I know this session has gone by so quickly. But before I let you go, I do want to ask about the burning bowl ceremony that you conduct. I'm really curious about that. And could you tell us a little bit about what that is? And
I'm It's my favorite thing in the entire year. I've been doing it for the last, I don't even know how many years, like maybe 4 or 5 years. And the Burning Bowl ceremony is a way that I love to kind of close out the year previous. And so when we talk about energy, if you can think about, think of a metaphor of a car, where if you drove your car the entire year and didn't give it a bath or a shower, how much accumulation would be on your car, how dirty it would be, how many leaves maybe or sap might be on your car. That's how I feel like a whole year without doing any energy work might feel like. To really honor the close of a year, it's really important to kind of review that year, assess it, really notate what the highs, the lows, the learnings were from that year, so you can really bring that chapter to a close. And I also feel, you know, in the beginning of January, everyone wants to kind of start the year fresh and like they start doing the vision boarding, but I'm like, you got to close out what had just happened and really honor that so that you can really create the spaciousness and be magnetizing for what it is that you want. And so Burning Bowl ceremony is my favorite way to do it. The last couple of years have been about the same, where it was very much the modalities that I was practicing. So it was like a physical practice where we kind of accessed the places that we wanted to release. We did some journaling and then the Burning Bowl ritual, which is like the best part of it. But this year, what I really wanted to kind of offer was a whole different way of looking at it, where previously I was really like set in a goal setting formula of like, you know, I do this by this month and date. But this year, what I really want to share with people is an opportunity to really access and understand, how do you want to feel? Like, how did 2022 feel for you? What is it that's still going on? Like, we'll do a little bit of body mapping. So like, we'll figure out where 2022 is still living in our bodies. Figure out what it is that we need to heal or close that chapter or give spaciousness for that to continue to heal. And then really think about how we want to feel in 2023. And a lot of the importance that will be placed upon really closing 2022 and being open to 2023, because when I'm tuning into the energy of the world right now, it's really difficult for us to even plan or know what is going to happen. And can we give ourselves that grace of being open to it, right? And then noticing if it isn't within what we want, how to shift that. And then with the Burning Bowl, all my favorite elements. So we will do a little bit of a physical yoga practice, which will be gentle, which is my nature. There'll be a Reiki-infused Shavasana. So really allowing you to connect with your body wisdom in that space and way. There'll be moments to journal and reflect and really write down and clarify. And then the Burning Bowl ritual is my favorite. I've got this candle that I've had for many, many years, and we take this beautiful fly paper and we kind of write down what it is that we want to release. And so sometimes it's a word, sometimes it's a completely written on piece of paper of all the things that we release. But we light it up, we let it fly. It's kind of a beautiful ritual. And then we pick our word of the year. So I've got a bowl of angel cards, and it's just a wonderful way. It's my favorite thing too, because you'll see people's faces, they'll pick a word and they're like, this isn't the word that I wanted. I'm like, oh, it's the perfect word for your year. And it's fun to see how that word comes to light over the course of the year. My other secret favorite part of about this is that I have everyone write themselves a letter to themselves, and almost like, you know, telling yourself what it is that you're grateful for, blah, 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 at the end of the year. And that's something that I send at the end of the year. So it's fun to kind of see that come in December. So it's a whole cyclical year thing, but you're free. Come on in.
Yeah, that sounds super exciting. So where can the listeners like learn all about your offerings and the different events and spaces you hold? Like, how can they learn more about you?
The two greatest places to connect with me will be on my website, which is just my name, lizandelong.com, or on Instagram, lizandelong.
Cool. Well, thank you so much today for being on the podcast and just sharing your story and just sharing your divine wisdom and presence with the audience. I could really feel this like throughout the entire conversation. And yeah, I'm so grateful to have you here today.
Thank you so much, Joyce. It's been a joy.
Thank you so much for listening to the Permission to Become podcast. If you like what you've heard, don't forget to rate, review, or subscribe to this podcast and share it with a friend. I'd really appreciate it. I'd also love to hear any feedback you have, so feel free to email me at permissiontobecome@gmail.com.